I'm Randy Alfred. This is The Gay Life on KSAN for April. The music was from Camille O'Grady, a leather chanteuse with whom we'll be speaking later in the show. Also today, we'll talk to Bob Opel, the proprietor of South of Market's Fayway Gallery, and to filmmaker Artie Bresson. Our first guests this morning are two officers of the Golden Gate Business Association, Arthur Lazare, who's president, and Cynthia Neff, who's vice president. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for coming to The Gay Life this morning.
Good morning, Randy. Good morning, Randy. Thanks for having us.
How large is the GGBA?
Right now, we have a little over 200 members, and we're growing constantly.
Now, are the members businesses or business people?
The combination of both. We have two categories of membership. We have general members and associate members. General membership is comprised of business owners, self-employed professionals, or property owners. And the associate members are people who don't quite fall into that category, but who are either interested in Golden Gate Business Association or work in gay businesses.
Or straight businesses, for that matter.
Or straight businesses.
What's the approximate breakdown of the two kinds of membership?
I think it's about 165 and 35. 165 general members, 35 associates at this point.
And how many years old is the association?
5 years old, Randy.
Now, does it do most of its work as a business organization in the gay community or as a gay organization in the general business community?
Uh-huh. That's a loaded question.
It's supposed to be.
I would have to put equal weight on it, all right? We are not, I would say, especially active in the general business community, except to the extent that our members are part of a general business community. We are business people and we are gay people. And we have found our home in GGBA in the sense that straight people have their business organizations, whether it's the Kiwanis or the Rotary or what have you, and gay people have not been made to feel particularly welcome there. Business people do have a need to congregate in groups to do things together that they can't do on their own. And so the need was there, and gay business organizations started in San Francisco and have sprung up all over the country.
What other cities have them now?
New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Houston, Toronto, Los Angeles.
This was the first?
At least a dozen of them. We were the first, yes.
Are they linked together in any fashion?
Not at this time, but our hope is that in June, the Freedom Day Parade weekend, we're staging a gay business fair. And in connection with that, we're going to have a conference, hopefully drawing the leaders from the gay business organizations around the country, with the idea in mind of forming a national gay business coalition.
Now, is the membership primarily male, as in most gay organizations?
At this point, sadly enough, it is primarily a male organization with strong leanings to try and change that. We have made some very serious outreach to the lesbian and women's professional organizations and trying to get more women and members at this point, so it's not just a male organization. We have been called the Golden Gate Business Men's Association in the past, and that is not what it is.
We never called ourselves
no,
that.
No, we never did. It was called by other forms of the press or by the people, businessmen's, but it is strictly a business association for men and women.
Moving back a little to your comment about the Kiwanis, Arthur, is it really more like Kiwanis and Rotary or more like a gay chamber of commerce?
I'm not sure of the difference, Randy. To me, the Chamber of Commerce represents a very downtown organization, largely dealing with big businesses. Our business is a small business people. We're more in the order of neighborhood businesses, I would say, although there are exceptions to that. So that in the sense that it's has a social content as well as an economic and some political content, I would think it's possibly more like a Kiwanis, yeah.
At your installation dinner in January, Board of Supervisors President John Molinari suggested that there would soon be a gay director of the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce on their board of directors. Is that part of some concerted lobbying effort, or is any moves being towards that? Was that
none,
prediction? Was
what? Uh-huh. I don't know where John Molinari was coming from when he made that remark. I have a small feeling it was grandstanding. Unfortunately, what was reported subsequent to that was that when the Chamber of Commerce had their next board of directors meeting, they all sat down and had a good laugh about it, which points up perhaps even more so the need for our organization.
You said there are mostly small businesses. What are your own businesses, for instance, and what are the kinds of other businesses that are involved?
Well, I have a store on Haight Street called Reflections. Arthur is a CPA. Most of our businesses are small. Printers, janitorial services, auto mechanics, plumbers, you name it.
And lawyers, florists, the entire range of small shops and services and professions that you find in the community at large are represented in our group.
So they don't. Most of these businesses typically don't have very many employees?
They're small businesses, so as with any small businesses, they might have. They may be one person, they may be a dozen or more, some of them.
Are any of them unionized, or does GGBA have any official stance toward unionization of gay businesses?
I don't know if we have any unionized members or not. It has never been an issue. It's never been a point that our members have brought to the attention of the board for any kind of action.
So GGBA has never had any official discussion of unionization?
None.
The question has never really been raised. I'm not aware if our members are unionized, or there hasn't been any problems in that direction.
Have you been asked to take any stance on the bakery or patio cafe controversy?
No, nor is the patio cafe a member of our organization.
You publish a directory each year. Is the current one up to date, or...
The new one, the 1979 directory, is in editorial process now, and we hope to have it out by the 1st of May, just a month away. There has been some turnover. The organization has changed some in nature, Randy. We have opened an office and hired a staff person so that our expenses have gone up substantially and we raised our dues. And as a result, some of people whose interest in GGBA perhaps was more marginal and stayed in because the dues were much lower in the past have decided not to stick with us. But on the other hand, the new level of professional management that the organization is getting has drawn in a whole new group of members who feel they're getting their $90 worth by being a general member of GGBA.
What kind of projects is that new professional management going to be aimed towards?
A lot of it has to do with just getting our own house in order. With over 200 members and putting on an event every month, there's a lot of planning involved. There's a lot of record keeping involved. A set of books has to be kept. State and federal income tax or information returns must be filed every year. The lines of communication have to be kept open. In the past, we didn't have an office. It was all unpaid volunteers and people who were elected to the board of directors doing it in their spare time. And it wasn't always done as professionally as it might have been done. And we're getting that act together. We do have a lot of new projects in mind, and they're coming on gradually as we gear up to be able to handle them.
Do you offer any services to members from having this kind of large organization, such as, say, health or insurance plans through the GGBA?
We have just put together a group health insurance plan, which is going to be in the mail to our members within the next week or two. We're working on a group dental plan. Quite frankly, Randy, I see those as nice fringe benefits of belonging to our organization, but I think there are two very fundamental things which are my motivation and which I hope would be motivating our other members. One is we're gay business people out promoting our businesses, and we're upfront that that's what we're doing. We're mutually supportive in that way. Our directory and our referral service are part of that game plan, if you will. The other side of it is that I see San Francisco as still, even with changes that are going on, as about the nicest socio-political economic environment for a gay person to live that perhaps ever existed. And I feel a commitment to helping to preserve that. And I think the only way we do preserve it is by being a well-organized community. We're organized politically. We're organized in a business sense now. We're just one of the many organizations. But only by being organized do we have a stronger voice with the powers that be at City Hall.
If the organization sees its virtue in being up front, why isn't the name gay or gay and lesbian in the organization's name?
It wasn't originally up front. 5 years ago, in order to get such an organization started, times have changed a lot in 5 years, Randy. in order to get such an organization started at all, it had to be very closety. And until this past year, the word gay never appeared on any of our literature, and it was never used in any official context with a Golden Gate function. This is no longer true. Our 1979 directory makes a clear-cut statement about what kind of an organization we are, and in all of our relations with the public, we're making it clear at this point. So that it has been a matter of time and development and an organization as a group coming out of the closet.
Well, too, our feelings right now is that we are business people who happen to be gay. That being gay is a very important thing, but it's the most important thing is that we are a group of business people with more or less the same goals in mind, and we happen to be gay.
If people want to get in touch with the organization or obtain a copy of the new directory when it comes out, how would they go about doing that?
Well, our new office phone number is 956-8660, and someone is there 3 days a week, or the answering service will pick it up. Or you can get in touch with us through our post office box, 966 San Francisco 94101.
Okay, what was the phone number again?
956-8660.
Or box 966 San Francisco 94101.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much for being with us here this morning. Arthur Lazare, president of the Golden Gate Business Association, and Cynthia Neff, vice president of GGBA.
Thanks for having us, Randy.
Thank you very much, Randy.
I saw you in the street. I met you in a bar. I did you in an alley. I had you in a car. Fast food, fast food. New York City treat. Eat it, forget it. Fast food can't be beat. Don't want your seven-course meals like the way it feels to get fast food. Don't cook that meat. I like it ready to eat. Give me fast food. Jump in my car. Don't have to go very far for that fast food. Don't sit and wait. What you lose when you hesitate. Waiter, waiter, I'll see you later when you have yourself to serve. Take some mean appetite and a little bit of nerve to get fast food. I saw you in the street. I met you in a bar. I did you in an alley and I had you in a car. Fast food, San Francisco treat. Eat it, forget it. Fast food can't be beat. Fast food can't be beat. Fast food can't be beat. I saw you in the street. I met you in a bar. I did you in the alley. I had you in a car. Fast food, fast food. San Francisco treat. Eat it, forget it. Fast food can't be beat.
That was the music of Camille O'Grady, with backed up by Dick Shine on synthesizer. And we have Camille O'Grady in our studio now, along with Robert Opel. Camille is a transplanted San Francisco performer.
No, New York performer.
But transplanted to San Francisco,
right,
from New York. And who, in addition to the musical performances that she does, and you've already heard two pieces on this show, has produced some visual art as well. Bob Opel operates the Fayway Gallery on Howard Street in San Francisco, and where, among other artists, Camille O'Grady's material has been displayed. Camille, as a woman, what's your primary interest, almost preoccupation, one might say, in gay male sexuality?
Well, I actually don't look at it at all as a preoccupation in gay male sexuality. It just happens that gay men have caught on to my images faster than other people have. I think if you take apart any of my songs, anybody could do them except for Toilet Kiss, where, but, you know, it could be a straight guy getting a blowjob in the toilet, too. But I think, I mean, the purpose, if there is one, after I've written the things, is that everybody should be able to get off on them somehow or another.
Toilet Kiss is a song that we did not play on this performance due to some lyrics which would be objectionable to the FCC. Bob, it seemed you were about to make a comment.
No, it's just always nice to be controversial. You know, so it's always good to go somewhere where they say, well, we can't play this. That always happens to me. I say, no, well, you can't say that. You can't come nude here. You can't show your pee-pee or whatever. You know, I get that all the time. So that's fun.
For background, Robert Opel is the man who streaked the Academy Awards several years ago. And therefore, in terms of showing one's pee-pee, as you put it, may have the most widely viewed one in the world.
That's right, yeah, that's true. 76 million people or something have seen mine. So once you see it, there's no reason to hide anymore. So.
Still, Camille, there are very few women who have written song lyrics, performed as extensively, and also have done visual graphic arts that are as concerned with male-male sexuality.
Right. Well, definitely my drawings are usually men. And it's interesting because women tend to relate to my work very well. As a matter of fact, if anybody gets uptight about it, it would tend to be straight men. And I find that real interesting. Because it's sort of, I guess it's sort of, because I am a woman, I bring out also a sort of feminine aspect of the sexuality as well. I definitely have spent most of my time recently performing. We've performed a lot of gay places and so on, but that's not where I started out, and I did always sing about what I sing about.
Where did you perform in New York?
Well, the first band I was in literally opened CBGBs and the Club 82 and all that. I mean, I was on the punk circuit before there was a punk circuit. And I had a following for that. And gay following kind of really happened after I started. And I had been writing about all of it before I met all of the gay people that I know that are into it. So sort of finding a crowd instead of, you know, coming from one, so to speak.
But even the clothing that you wear,
mm-hmm.
and I wish our viewers, our listeners could view it, is kind of a modified Folsom Street leather drag, modified by what looked like just a score of rosary-type objects hanging around your neck, necklace upon necklace.
Religious jewelry.
Right there, my sort of magic, I collect things and so on. Again, the leather, I mean, it's very funny. When I first started singing, they tried to put me into, they called it 50s revival because I was wearing leather. Now it's Folsom Street or on punk rock or something like that.
I would call it leather cabaret as a style.
But yes, I like to wear black and I like to wear leather. I've always been involved with those images. I mean, the fact that I am a woman that sings about, writes about certain things and does certain things that most other women don't do simply because they're told they couldn't, you know, is indicates what my attitude towards the whole thing is to be, end up with.
Well, I do think that that it does have a certain appeal. I first, to so-called gay people, I first heard about Camille because she performed in a club in New York called the Mine Shaft, which is a sex club where men go to be sexual with other men. So MySpace is a place where I showcase artists who deal with sexual images. And so I guess it's appropriate that that she appeared in MySpace and that I become involved with her and her art. Although it's hard sometimes to use words and to put people in categories and so on, but I do call myself gay or homosexual because I have given myself permission to love other men, and the artists that I show in my space do deal with those images. But as you say, it's just a convenient thing to, you know, so people can understand better about what you're doing and how, what images you use. But you don't have to necessarily be limited by all those categories. It's just words that help people understand about things.
Well, I mean, I do the Mine Shaft, And that's a very specialized area. At the same time, you know, I opened for Lou Reed in the Bottom Line. Now that's, I mean, there's somebody who sung about all sorts of things, and nobody shoved him into a category about whether he was singing about gay or straight sex.
Right, it just helps people understand.
Yeah. I don't like, I must say, I get very irritated with people being stuck in one thing or the other. I mean, just because somebody, you know, any more than if somebody is homosexual once, does that make them homosexual all the time, or vice versa? Who cares, you know?
That, of course, I think is a very, very interesting issue.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it all comes down to.
Whether or not the term gay implies a certain sensibility or consciousness beyond sexual behavior, which, I mean, in the end, one could be reduced in terms of, say, to plumbing. That is, in terms of who connects what part of what body to whom. And there are people who say we're completely different from everybody else, except for what we do in bed, which is the reverse of what you usually say, which is we're exactly the same.
Well, right. It's kind of the great debate now. And Camille is interesting in a way because she, like, comes into the scene as a woman and sings about these images. So she's opening a whole new kind of space in a way for to expand the category. So she is like a new piece of information or energy that sort of helps to expand the category. So she really is kind of interesting. That's what interests me in some ways about her, I guess.
Well, the other thing too, I have been sexually involved with people who are supposedly gay, but that doesn't mean that changed them into something else. And I have, you know, been involved with women too, but it's, I think that a lot of people get very, I think part of the reason why the quote gay culture is more avant-garde than a lot of other ones are is simply because they had to drop a very big frame of reference to start off with. And the frame of reference is that you're supposed to deal with the other sex sexually, not your own sex. So having dispensed with that frame and found that they could find an alternative way, I think that makes them more open to new things. And that, I think, is the big difference. And I think the difference will fade as that particular sexuality is more accepted, if it is, but still it puts one automatically on a in a rebel position that worked.
Well, it's all kind of circular now, because it sort of all sort of comes back to go again.
Yeah, I know.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Comes back to
go, you know, so like to start. Yeah,
it's sort of like if you're a gay guy and all of a sudden you're involved with a woman, that's a very weird thing too. So
that's the far out new fetish.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. So.
I don't know. It's very funny, but it doesn't.
So you're in a way raising the thesis or giving it a trial run.
I hope so. Yes.
That once one is liberated of straight sexuality, that all of one's subsequent sexual experience, regardless of the gender of partner, is gay in a liberated, non-procreative, non-family,
right,
experimental,
right,
whatever. And
yeah,
of
right,
course,
that's good. Yeah.
One of the things is, of course, that it's not just what we do in bed, but what we do out of bed. And for instance, a lot of the sexual imagery in your songs, Camille, in your art, and in the other artists whose work appears at Feiwei, is kind of more the sexual scene rather than the sexual bed, where it's happening in a variety of locations and mm-hmm. with a variety of fantasy images.
Right. So all of a sudden, you had all these people that were that they're called gay or whatever that were into being sexual with people who were of their same sex, and then they all kind of came together in some way, and out of this banding together, then became a whole sort of like kind of culture, and out of that culture, then all kinds of other ramifications now. So there's all kinds of other artistic ramifications, and it just sort of moves on from that. It's all very sort of fluid and expanding. It's all real interesting.
For those who want to see the gallery, could you give us the address and the hours,
yeah,
Bob?
1287 Howard Street, and I'm open from noon until 8 during the week, except on Monday and Tuesday I'm closed, and then on the weekends, on Friday and Saturday I'm open from noon until midnight.
1287 Howard. That's the corner of 9th.
Yeah.
Okay, and Camille, do you have any performances coming up?
I'm going to be doing some performances in L.A., and I will be in the process of booking some things in town here.
What she does is really, truly an expression of great artistic quality, and she's brilliant.
thank you, Bob Opel. Thank you, Camille O'Grady, for being with us this morning, and hope we'll see you again soon, and I hope that people get a chance to pick up on Camille's singing, and also drop by Fayway Gallery and see the kind of definitely experimental artwork that is there regularly with a continuing series of high-quality shows.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
My world, the life I freely chose. My world, it has its highs and lows. The sun, it makes the day bright. The moon lights up the nighttime sky. The day ends in my world. Tonight I ask why. Why did I choose a life where blues are ordinary? Co-confusion is the rule of thumb. Why did I say yes to being gay? What was that feeling? Where did it come from? Why did I take a life where there's so much at stake? A life that takes sure strength to be not sad. Why did I say yes to being gay? Why did I choose a choice I never had? I've taken to my heart a part that feels so ordinary, strength in sharing with another man. It's taken long to hear the song that brings me nearer to myself. I'm just the way I am. I've opted for a life spent loving with my brothers, a full accepting love I've never had. It's strange to say, but now since yesterday, I'm not only gay.
That was Saying Yes to Being Gay, written and performed by Tommy Talley from the soundtrack of the 1977 film Gay USA. And we have in our studios this morning Artie Bresson, who is the co-producer and director of Gay USA, as well as the producer and director of Passing Strangers, a 1974 film, and Forbidden Letters, a recently released 1979 film. How are you doing this morning, Artie?
Wonderful. Feeling wonderful.
Artie, your films have seemed to all fall in the space between the political and the erotic, so that some of the erotic films have been criticized, or not criticized, but spoken of as being too political, and having, and some of the political films have been spoken of as being too erotic.
Uh-huh.
Is that a pattern that's detected by people who watch the film that wasn't intended, or is it part of your grand scheme?
It's detected, and it was planned. Most people feel that in my explicit sexual films that there's too much head material, too much, no pun intended, too much to think about along with the feelings. And in my more ostensibly political film like Gay USA, there was too much emphasis on affection and touching and feeling. I find those categories shallow. I think loving is very political, and political things don't have to be dreary. They can be entertaining and supple And very physical. And Gay USA has seen some commercial distribution, but it's been a problem film. The basic problem has been with redneck Americans and closet gay bookers and distributors. Most straight folks, WASPs and middle-of-the-roaders, seem to like the film very much. And gay people, men and women, in audience situations, enjoy the picture with some reservations, like with all movies. But the big reservation about the film has been it's too gay, that there's too much emphasis on touching and feeling within a political context. And like the distributor of the film recently sent me a letter saying that many people want to buy the film, like libraries and schools, but the school boards won't purchase a film that has the title Gay USA, that has the word gay in it. So yeah, I've been running this problem with Gay USA and my other films for a long time.
Well, would you have any objection to coming out with a different version of some of the same footage that was intended for different purpose?
Well, yeah. You know, I thought about it when the distributor sent me a very kind letter saying he'd like to make some money back with this film to pay off the debt on it. And I said, well, that's neat. But when the film first came out, TV stations here in the Bay Area were willing to put some of it on. And the sum they wanted was the sort of safer, straighter side of gay life. And it's not a matter of principle. It's just I'm irked by the fact that I'd have to recut the picture, and I wouldn't do it. I feel it's like my child. I wouldn't rip off the right arm to protect the left arm or rip out the leftist politics to make the middle of the road more palatable. I just wouldn't do it. It's not me.
It's strange that, in a way, some of the same people who would be objecting, it seems to me, to the long hugs and the French kisses and the political movie are the same ones who say, well, why do they call him gay? I mean, because in a sense you were showing the political origins of that gayness. I mean, you were showing celebration in a very explicit and sometimes bodily sense, because here were people coming together and they came together physically as well.
Well, you know, to me, gay begins with who you like to get it on with, who you like to hug and kiss and be affectionate and passionate with. If I like to do that basically with women, I would be straight. Since I like to do that with men and boys, and older men and younger boys, I am gay. Many other things come from that, a ghetto sensibility, a gay inclination, whatever. But the primal beginning is who you're turned on by. That seems sort of evident to me. The people who say there's too much sex in the sex films, there's too much politics in the sex films, why don't you just keep them sexy? And there's too much touching in your political film, why don't you just show them marching instead of touching, are in many times the same people. Like the Pacific Film Archive over in Berkeley told me that Gay USA was politically demeaning to gay people because we showed gay people smiling and laughing and touching in the sunshine.
Now, was this a gay person who told you that?
These were two gay women who were in charge of looking at the film and made the decision not to at all show it there. I've run into that since I came to the Bay Area in the middle 60s. Most people have a very narrow definition of politics. They think that politics is speech-making, that a preachment, a righteous preachment, is automatically political because of its stand. And they miss the fact that if you're dealing with Americans, that entertainment is innately political. So in my films, I try and abandon the speech-making because I know that only appeals to a tiny percentage of intellectuals and embed the message in entertainment feelings, emotional positions. My feeling is that politics, if you view it in that narrow sense, almost applies to nothing. If you view it in the broader sense, it can apply to everything, like this program or a rock and roll record or who your lover is.
Well, if politics applies to everything, does it have any meaning anymore as a term?
Sure. I don't think that because it applies to everything, it's a dilated term, hence rinsed so that it has no meaning. I think that the people who define politics had better just look to the other arts and other subjects to see that politics is not just making a speech on Gay Freedom Day that has all the right political words like nurture, support, brothers and sisters, that only appeals to a tiny percentage of people even on that day. That's why most people are bored during speeches and are probably making passes at the Gay Freedom Day while those speeches are on. I've watched audiences do that. I've done it.
Gay people who are finding difficulty with dealing with gay sexuality in what is supposed to be a gay political film. Or gay eroticism, because, I mean, there is no explicit sexuality
right
in Gay USA
no.
in terms of something that would make it X-rated, for instance, mm-hmm. or even R. But it seems to me are following the line of straight people who say that gay people are just like straight people except for what they do in bed, and they'd better only do it in bed.
Uh-huh.
The people who object to any kind of eroticism being brought out of the bedroom.
Well, I think eroticism only in the bedroom is boring. I think that's a sort of dictatorial view of where I should be open about who and what I love. I found a lot of people would prefer to think that gay people are only pass out pamphlets or only vote or only buy in the Castro or only remember Harvey Milk and forget that the larger message, the largest humane message, is that we are affectional, loving, passionate people. And if films shy away from those subjects visually because they're afraid of incurring the wrath of politicos or people in power broker situations who use terms like politically incorrect and politically correct, they're missing the strength in gay life. They're missing the watershed, the Mississippi of gay life, which is who we love and how we love. And to hide that fact when we make a speech in public or try and get a coalition of people to help us politically, to hide that fact is not only a lie, it's just bad American organization. Because Americans will like you and back you if they feel you're honest about the presentation of your life, even though it may irk them. An example, I've appeared with Gay USA throughout the country, and a lot of women, straight women who are Christians, raise their hand at the end of the film and say, I liked your film, I really would like to believe I'm for your rights, but the scenes of the men embracing and the men kissing made me feel queasy. And I always ask them why, and they said, we don't know why. I don't know why. I just felt sort of weird watching those two young men in the sunshine holding one another each other's arms and looking so happy together.
While the song that we just heard was being played.
Right, you know. And they don't know why they feel queasy. They're willing to admit that they feel uneasy watching that. And I think that's symptomatic of a whole thing that's not just a gay problem or a straight problem. It's an American problem. Anytime Americans have to deal directly with feelings without a vicarious protection, without a smokescreen, whether it's drama or soap operas, anytime we have to deal with direct feelings, Americans sort of fritz out. Their circuits are blown. And that's not even in aggressive scenes, but even in gentle scenes. And that's why I put them in the film. I mean, I put them in on purpose to make people aware that it's the problem is in them, not in the gay loving, not in the pictures of it, but it's embedded in their own eyes and ears and bodies and stomachs.
There are people in San Francisco, both in the gay community and the straight community, who suggest that some of Mayor Feinstein's problems with the gay community reflect not a discomfort with homosexuality so much as a discomfort with sexuality in general. Is that the kind of thing you were talking about?
Exactly. When I look at pictures of Dianne Feinstein and view her just as a picture, get the body English, if I was directing her in a scene, if I was going to cast her in a scene, I would cast her as a very superficially liberal person, but deep down, frightened by feelings, frightened by emotions. This is metapolitical. This is above her voting record, although her voting record will subtly support this view of her, that she's pretty tight, although she knows the jargon and the lingo, but in her actual personal fluidity, she's rigid. And her view on pornography and the easy-to-pop shot sides of sexuality, I think, has borne this out.
Well, right now, Forbidden Letters, which premiered in San Francisco at the Knob Hill, the Knob Hill is now the subject of action by the district attorney under the Red Light Abatement Act. So here you are.
The Puritan Abatement Act, right.
Right, which was passed in the early part of the second decade of this century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a place that shows films. It's shown some of your films. Your films have been heralded as being a new dimension in gay eroticism in that it's not just a flesh film, and in fact, that may make it more dangerous in that it's not the old-fashioned porno loop of just flesh flesh against flesh, that in fact it's coupled with some real feelings.
Uh-huh.
I, for one, at the end of Forbidden Letters, found myself crying, which is something I will rarely do at the end of any film, let alone a film that's been a sexual turn-on as well as an emotional turn-on. Do you think that makes the eroticism even more frightening for people like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that's
the... I mean, the film, the places that show your films are in danger of being cut down, of shut down, I mean.
Yeah, one of the reasons they want to close down the so-called gay erotic cinema is that these are the only theaters currently where gay people can go and see any semblance of their lives on the screen. Granted, a flesh film, which is just a flesh film, only shows the sexual side or tries to show it, and it's called very exploitive. But I think flesh films are fine. I think they're the beginning of what could be a cinema that deals legitimately and honestly and in a diversified way with our lives as gay people. That includes gay women, lesbians, men, whatever. The fact that only the surface has been scratched is just an indication of how difficult it is in this country it is to show anything emotional, anything sexual. Also, we live in a time of segregation. The regular cinemas, like the Castro and the Lumiere and the Richelieu and the Gateway, they show allowable cinema, allowable gay images, allowable straight images. And then we have a segregated cinema where we're allowed to see what really goes on in people's bedrooms, what really goes on in their sexual lives. So long as America has this schizophrenic, segregated cinema, you're going to find the excesses that you find on either side, e.g. The Sound of Music, where nobody touches, or a film like Killing Me Softly, where there's a lot of touching and a lot of sex. I'm against that form of segregation. I'd like to see it. I'd like to have the camera not have to hide its eyes when two men walk up a staircase and start to touch. And that's what I'm trying to do in my films, to show that you can show explicit scenes and not be antithetical to traditional cinema techniques, editing, montage, cinematography, planning, characterization, all those things. I think that if a film has all the traditional cinema values and dares to show, in a non-exploitive way even, dares to show what two men really do, that is infinitely more dangerous, hence more shuttable down, than showing flesh films, because flesh films have an inherent distance in them. You don't really believe what's going on. But if you really start to believe this boy and this man or these two men as they're kissing, that is truly politically dangerous, because people might come out of the theater and decide they should be more open about their personal lives and not hide it away in the master bedroom. And that's what I'm about in making my erotic films.
You know, ostensibly the reason that this theater and other places in the city are being acted against by the district attorney has to do with what people do in the non-screening rooms of the establishments.
Well, I've been getting it on at the Strand Theater for years, up in the balcony, and no one's ever bothered the Strand. The fact that the belief that these theaters are offending public morals is just a patent cover for a puritanical crackdown on people who are having a good time. To get into any of these theaters, you have to pay an astronomically high admission fee, sign a membership card, and even when you're in there, even if you had infrared vision, you couldn't see what people were doing in the arcades and stuff. So I don't know, it seems like a very false issue. A 10-year-old child would know it's a false issue just from the mere pronouncement of it. And yes, people go to those theaters, and when they're bored by what's on the screen or they see someone in the theater, they may go back and make a connection behind the screen. But that's all very private.
What do you think's happening in San Francisco now?
I think what's happening in terms of gay things, I've been here since the mid-60s. I think San Francisco's moved out of its underground Stonewall era and moved into what I would call a co-opted, moving towards the mainstream era for most gay people.
What are the signs of that?
Well, the rise of the ghetto, the Castro ghetto especially, which is a very necessary, comfortable place for gay people to have to go to, but which is in itself automatically seductive to ever coming out of the ghetto and dealing with the real world, the world that involves men and women and repression and ups and downs. I mean, the ghetto is a very comfortable place, and I'm glad it's there, and I go to it often to revivify myself. The danger in it is that you can go to it and never leave it and believe that this is how the world is. Gay waiters with gay smiles and gay drinks and gay conviviality, and yet four blocks away in the Mission, gay muggings and people getting beaten up and stabbed. And yet there's no sense of that when you're in the ghetto. So I like the ghetto in that when I'm tired of dealing with the straight world, I can go back there and be stroked and loved and applauded. The thing I don't like about it is it seems to be hermetically sealed and says, this is how life really is. And that's what I think has happened in San Francisco. We've lost the underground feel. I think Harvey's death is sort of a landmark of that feeling, and we sort of moved into a mainstream co-opted feel that gay means better business, gay means better stationery, more flowers, and to buy on the street. I think that's not too good. That's why I'm leaving San Francisco. To make the sort of films I want to make, I have to leave the womb and the comfortable seawater of the ghetto and go to where I can get backing larger amounts of money to make gay films that can play outside the segregated cinema, say the erotic cinema.
You talk about filmmaking, but you're not going to Hollywood. You're going to New York.
No, I wouldn't go to Hollywood. That's not where it's happening right now. There's money in New York. There are producers who are interested in me. And I have to go put my own chips on that turn of the roulette wheel and hope that I can get keep the freedom I have here but get the backing to make films that can be played not just in the gay segregated cinemas. But I can't do it here in San Francisco anymore. The other thing is I think people get used to the sorts of films that I've been making here on the West Coast, and they sort of expectation of miracles. I'm paid better in New York now to do the things I do here and have done here for free to make gay films. And so I have to go there if I want to make better films, more honest films for me.
What about the political community's regard towards the erotic aspects of your political films? Do you think you'll be a freer situation that way in New York?
In the Bay Area, if you make pornographic films or erotic films, you have to apologize to almost everyone you meet, men and women included. You're called promiscuous, exploitive, sexist, all those ists. And that's fine if you like being in an intramural, inbred, sort of can't-lose situation but can't-win situation either. In New York, you're judged more by your marketable talent. The politics is viewed in whether or not you're successful or not, not whether you're politically correct or politically incorrect. And if you're as hyper and as Gemini as I am, I like to be in a situation where people will judge me and go with me by what I can produce and do rather than my intention and picking the right words when I speak.
But you're not forsaking San Francisco.
No,
you'll be back.
I love San Francisco so much. It's hard for me to leave because it is so comfortable. It is so easy. It is so lyrically beautiful for me here, even now. But if I want to meet the challenges of my own insights, my own vision, I can't just stay where it's easy. And heaven knows I love the Castro. My office at 18th and Castro, and I've cruised there for years, and Gay USA opened at that theater, which was a high night for me in my life. But if I want to make harder films, films about gay violence and gay people fighting back, strangely enough, I'm not going to be able to make them in San Francisco, where the feeling here is that people are not fighting back. They're laying back. In New York, there is no political consciousness. There's only production. And since I have my vision, I just want to go there and produce it.
So that leaving San Francisco is really an existential choice to grow.
Yes, and it's a hard one. I may indeed convince these producers to give me the money to come back and finance a film I would film here. But I just can't have my living base, my life base here, because it's just not strong enough here for me anymore.
Well, when you come back to San Francisco, either to create a film or to show us your latest creations, we hope you'll join us on The Gay Life again. And thank you for coming here and being with us
this
morning.
Thanks a lot, Randy. Bye.
That was Artie Bresson, director of Gay USA and Forbidden Letters. Our other guests this morning were Arthur Lazare and Cynthia Neff of the Golden Gate Business Association, erotic art gallery proprietor Bob Opel, and Camille O'Grady, who we'll hear singing again in a moment. The Gay Life is produced for the KSAN Public Affairs Department by Fred Green and Dave McQueen. The Gay Life for May will be aired on May 6th and 8th. I'm your host, Randy Alfred. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
comes like a cutthroat. Love comes in spurts. Love comes so quietly, so quick and so neat. Love gets you in a headlock, and love knocks you off your feet. Love gets you in its grip, and love takes you by surprise. You're nothing but a heartbeat with a blindfold over its eyes. You are the captive. Love is the thief. Love keeps on taking, robs you without relief. Love sneaks up on you. You tell it, I'll do anything you want me to do. Tells you, get down on your knees, get down on your knees, get down on your knees, get down on your knees. You say, yes, yes, please, 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 please. Love comes like a cutthroat. Love takes your life. Love bleeds you dry.